American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Mecca Don over Zoom video. Mecca Don, born and raised in Columbus, Ohio. My family's originally from Cleveland. My parents are, actually. And I had an uncle that went to Ohio State. That's where Mecca Don went to college. He played football at Ohio State, which is unreal. But he got into music at an early age. He played in a band with his brother. He was the drummer, always writing raps. But, you know, huge focus on being an athlete. He also is a lawyer, went to NYU to be a lawyer. And while he was in New York, he was able to network with a bunch of people in the music industry. And he kind of got into music licensing. And that's what he did as a lawyer. Then he ended up writing a bunch of songs, licensing them to ESPN and the Browns, the Buckeyes, just a bunch of cool things. He ended up having an accident. He talks about that and ended up going through some surgery, which gave him a lot of downtime. And that's kind of where this new song he just wrote and released came from. It's called Still Dope. The video's out. It's amazing as well. So make sure to check that out. And you can check out the video interview with Mecca Don and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. We'd love it if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Mecca Don. So this podcast is all about you and your journey in music and how you got to where you are now. And first off, I want to say you played wide receiver for the Ohio State Buckeyes.
I did. Yeah, I walked on many years ago. But
Oh my gosh. My family's all from Cleveland. They're all huge. But one of my uncles went to Ohio State.
Oh, okay. All right. That's what's up, man.
Yeah. I went and saw a couple games. It's crazy. I mean, when it's game day there, it's like 100,000 people in the stands. Not one person is wearing the other team's gear.
The whole city kind of shuts down. It's like a religious ceremony almost in the whole city.
No, it really is. We went to this place. What's it called?
Bar City Club
right next door. And then it's just like everyone's throwing cans on the ground because there's like no bottles and they just like bulldozer it up after or something.
It's nuts, bro. It's
nuts. Oh, that is so cool. I saw that. I was like, no way. That's amazing.
Where are you?
I'm in Nashville now, but I'm originally from San Diego, California. Okay. But okay. I guess my parents both grew up in Cleveland or on the outskirts of Cleveland. And then My dad's youngest brother ended up going to Ohio State and so we've been fans and follow Ohio State football for my whole life.
I love it.
So super cool, man. Well, first off, tell me where were you born and raised? Were you born in Ohio?
Yeah, I was actually born and raised in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
All my siblings, my parents both went to Ohio State. I'm the youngest of four. All my siblings went to Ohio State. So by the time it was time for me to decide, it wasn't really much of a choice. But I mean, I was born and raised a Buckeye, so yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
So how did you get into music?
You know, it's interesting. When I was, first of all, when I was young, like four, I was breakdancing for people in the neighborhood and stuff like that. Like,
oh,
I always loved the hip hop music and culture. But also my parents, particularly my dad, he was always playing all kinds of music when we were growing up, you know. Not just hip hop, obviously. He was playing, you know, Marvin Gaye, Earth, Wind & Fire, Bob Marley, you know, Prince. And my siblings and I kind of fell in love with hip hop. And we were like writing raps and stuff in the basement when we were like kids. And I was like 8 years old. They were pretty bad raps. I hope they never said this.
You know, we cassette table, make it out somehow.
Right, exactly. And so it's just kind of I was born into a family that really cared and loved for music. And that kind of fostered my desire to be a musician. And ultimately I joined a band with my brother. My brother and I started a band when I was in high school. I was a drummer
and
stuff like that. We played all kinds of music, alternative hip hop, pop, funk, all kinds of stuff. So that was really where it started, and it just never left me.
Wow. So you're a drummer. Was that the first like instrument you picked up?
That was the first, and only instrument I picked up, and kind of self-taught. So it was, I haven't played in a long time. So if I got on right now, I might sound a little rusty, but it was fun. And, you know, just kind of playing different types of music and exploring your creative side. You know, being in a band, you can do that in jam sessions. You can just stuff that nobody else will ever hear, but you know, it gives you an opportunity to kind of see what you're good at and what sounds good. So
that's cool. So you guys would play like local shows and stuff?
Yeah, we played a lot of local shows. We actually played at Ohio State's campus at big show. That was pretty fun. We had like a 1,000 people came. It was, you know, or
wow.
And it was really cool. So, but you know, it was interesting because my brother bought like a ton of equipment. You know, he maxed out a credit card and bought like the drum set, the electronic drum set and the guitar. Sure. All the bass for all of us, and then he ended up buying a synthesizer, which was a great gift and a curse probably, because my cousin and I, when he wasn't there, my cousin and I would be in the basement, and my brother was the lead singer and lead guitarist, so when he's not there, we didn't really have a band, so we would end up playing around on the synthesizer trying to make beats and stuff like that, and that's how we ended up actually starting to rap, creating our own stuff. But we're not beat makers now, but that's what kind of got us into, you know, day to day, like just trying to make raps and beats and stuff like that.
Wow. And all while doing that, you're obviously playing football. If yes. You can't just walk on to Ohio State.
Well, I was athlete my whole life, played multiple sports in high school, and obviously ended up playing football. And so I was just juggling a lot, you know, juggling academics. I was a really good student, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I actually got a full ride academic scholarship to Ohio State.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I was invited to be a walk-on to Ohio State. So it's kind of perfect. You know what I mean? Like a perfect scenario. I could have played at smaller schools and, you know, in Ivy League schools and stuff like that, but that really wasn't my passion.
But why are you?
Ohio State, you know, or at least be on the team. I don't want to say I played. I was on the team.
But still, I mean, to be on the team, that's incredible.
It was an amazing experience, man. There's nothing in the world like that, you know. Running out of people ask me all the time, like, well, what's the most nerve wracking thing? Running out in front of 100,000 fans, you know, being in a courtroom and, you know, arguing in front of a jury or performing on stage. And it's like, God, they're all kind of, you know, they all kind of feel the same, but nothing in the world feels like running out in front of 100,000 fans.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I mean, just like I said, I went to the game and it was so cool. It was like you said, it's like a religious experience. It's just like, absolutely. I've never seen another sport where not one person out of everybody in the whole entire stands is wearing like the other team's jersey.
No, you can't wear the other color. You cannot.
Think
about what you're going to wear before you leave the house, you know?
Right.
So a week, you're like, prepare what your outfit's going to be. Yeah. And it's funny, I never really understood, you know, like the tailgating experience until later, you know, because when you're at the game, you don't know
what's going on.
But outside of the game and the tailgating experience is even crazier. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. I think it's like 400,000 people surrounding the stadium each game.
I'm not surprised. Like, it is so – yeah, you go – like, I remember we parked. I was with my uncle who went to Ohio State. So he, like – because he went there, he gets, like, a certain amount of tickets a year, like a chance to buy tickets. So I think he can go to, like, one or two games because he went there.
Yeah.
So we went to the game, and, yeah, we parked, and, like – you're walking through like the neighborhoods that kind of surround the school where there's a bunch of just like those big houses that all the, like they break into like four sections to make, you know, so 10 student housing units instead of like four. Right. And all the kids are in the front yard drinking and like playing cornhole and everything else.
That's part of the experience. If you go to Ohio State, you know, no matter how smart you are and what degree you're working towards, that is part of the experience that you cherish and you remember, you know?
Oh yeah. I was so jealous. I'm like, I wish I would have went to school here. Like this just looks like it's so much fun.
It was a blast.
Wow. And then, so you ended up going to, you're a lawyer too.
Yeah.
So from Ohio State, where did you go to law school?
I ended up moving to New York and went to NYU for law school.
And
it was interesting too, because, you know, the reason why NYU even got, New York even got on my radar is my brother and my sister both moved to New York to pursue their careers. And so that's how New York even kind of got on my radar. And then obviously having the goal of being an entertainer and an artist, you know, mm-hmm. York, being able to go to NYU and then being able to go to New York was like killing two birds with one stone.
Sure.
So when I got there, I actually deferred law school for a year. I got in and then deferred for a year. So that full first year, I was literally just running around the city trying to figure out what everything was, who everybody was. I met so many people, got involved in throwing parties and stuff like that. I met a lot of people in the industry, did some modeling, did some acting, did some music. I was video guy. I was in all the music videos. It was I learned a ton that 1 year before I even started law school. But then, yeah, I went to NYU, had a great experience there. A lot of people see, like, how does that make sense? You're a lawyer, you're an artist. How do those things make sense? And interestingly enough, there's been a ton of overlap in my career as an artist with that in law, right? Being able to understand the contracts that I'm getting into, being able to negotiate my own contracts.
Yeah, that's huge.
Game changer. And then even if I can't do it myself, knowing who to pull in, right? Knowing people in the industry, having a network of who I can bring in to help me kind of do that. But I've been able to negotiate my own contracts with HBO and ESPN and Hard Knocks and, you know.
Oh, wow. Oh, did you get a part in Hard Knocks when they did the Browns?
Yeah, I have an official Browns anthem.
That yeah, like, Rock for My Browns, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I put that all together, like, after I started reading, because I listened to your songs, and I'm like, okay, like, cool. Like, some of his album covers, he's got Ohio State on it. That's pretty cool. And then, like, when I started reading your press release and everything, I'm like, wait a minute. Like, yeah. This is all about the Browns.
Right. Yeah. So I have a couple of songs that are literally just Browns anthems and Ohio State anthems that are, like, literally, so like, sick. University. And licensed by the Browns. And so they play them at the games and stuff like that too. So that was, and interestingly enough, that was something that also was birthed out of my experience as a lawyer. When I was working at a big corporate firm, I was working in what we call, you know, intellectual property litigation. So intellectual property is generally patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
Oh, sure.
So one of the cases we were working on was like a music licensing case with, I think it was Real Networks, who was, you know, not around anymore really like that, in Yahoo. And so I ended up learning about music licensing, what that even meant. And as an artist, especially an independent artist, you're trying to figure out all these different lanes. What are the lanes where I can actually make inroads, you know, find fans, get exposure, and then also make some money, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's what kind of put me on to the idea of music licensing. So when I started pursuing my career on my own, music licensing was something that was always something that I knew I was going to try to pursue. And so that's what kind of sparked the idea initially as well.
Wow. Okay. That's so cool. And then that leads us to, like, you were doing that and just kind of releasing music on as while you were doing licensing. And obviously you were able to get these songs with the stadiums and with the show. And that's so incredible.
Yeah, it was cool. It was, as an independent artist too, you know, you have to find a lane, you know, and it's hard. Like, it's hard to get listened to. It's hard for people to even listen to your music. Even your friends sometimes, you're like, they won't listen, you know?
Right.
So they see you on ESPN. They're like, oh, wait, I heard you on First Take this morning. Now they want to listen.
Now they care, right? Yeah.
So it was like, you know, so I, you know, you had to keep pushing and keep finding opportunities. And, you know, I had done big stuff. I mean, I was on MTV. I was MTV freshman. I won that award and they played my videos on that.
Oh, wow.
A long time, and did licensing with ESPN. I had licensed probably over a dozen songs to ESPN that they played during their broadcast. One of my songs, Real One, a couple years ago was ESPN First Take Song of the Month. So they play that every day on First Take.
And, oh, that's so cool.
The bottom and all that type of stuff. And so it's a grind, but I ended up finding a lane that I think worked for me. And at least built my profile. So then, you know, that wasn't the only, I didn't want to only be known for that type of music, but at least helped build my profile and made people decide, okay, he's a real artist. I'm going to listen to him. And
sure.
You know, sometimes people want to see that cosign before they take you seriously.
Oh yeah. I know. That's like the hardest part, is to get people's like attention and like the credits kind of under your belt.
Yes, exactly.
That's amazing. And then you have a new song out called Still Dope, which is incredible. But I'm curious to when, okay, so where were you when this whole like virus hit? Were you working on music? Were you working as a lawyer or doing a bit of everything?
I left the law firm in 2007 and I kind of never really looked back. I mean, I'd still maintain certain relationships and certain clients, and, you know, I would dibble and dabble because I paid for that. So I
exactly
abandoned completely.
Sure.
But I'd really been focused on the music consistently since then. And so it was 2018, I had a song called Nip and Tuck that went viral because it had a dance challenge that a lot of these kids were doing across.
Oh, wow. Okay. I want to hear about that.
Yeah. So it was like, and it wasn't even a specific dance. It was just that people just loved the song. The chorus said, I'm feeling like a million bucks. So like that just gave people a certain type of energy. So you would see people on the beach, you know, feeling like a million bucks, whatever, wherever they were. And so that created like, just, you know, a huge kind of stir online. You know, I was featured everywhere. I was traveling all over the country, performing everywhere. And so that was like 2018. And then going into 2019, I had a follow-up song that I was going to release called Born to Win with a video. Had these two like really famous twins that are in it, boxing twins. They're like 10 years old from Philadelphia. Really, really cool. And in the beginning of January of 2019, I got in a car accident, or a car ran over my foot.
Oh my gosh.
Broke my foot, and that just crushed everything. I mean, literally slowed me down at the height of probably my career at that point. Tried to do some conservative treatment. It didn't really work. So I ended up having to have surgery, and that killed everything. And I was in New York. So you can imagine, you know, trying to move around New York. I had a 2-year-old son, you know, being in a boot and a knee scooter. And then I had, you know, my other foot started hurting. So I had a surgical shoe on this foot. It was just a disaster. So to be honest, I kind of gone into a, you know, like a depression, you know, because sure. of who I've been and who I'd been for years, and trying to figure out what do I do now? You know, what does this mean? Is this a sign of some sort? Is this a sign telling me like, look, this isn't what you need to be doing? Or is this a sign telling me, hey, this is the last obstacle that you have in front of you before you really make it? Do you really want this? I didn't know what it meant. Mm-hmm. And then it was just kind of like, it became overwhelming for me and my wife. And so we ended up moving back to Ohio because we needed help. You know, all my family was here. So that, and then shortly after that, the pandemic hit a couple of months later. So it was crazy. Like just being sat down literally because of the injury, and then kind of being sat down because of the pandemic. And it caused a whole bunch of chaos in my life.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's, oh man. I know surgery. I've had, four of them on my cervical spine. It's definitely put you in a depression, because if you're so used to just, you know, especially, I mean, your foot being so active and being an athlete, like to be totally stopped and be like, you know, you can't really move around anymore for a while at least. Like,
and then also it's like you realize how much you take for granted. Like, you know, right. Like the foot is the body, and it really is. Like, you know, just because the other thing is your feet, you know, you can't, like, if it's your arm, you can kind of not put weight on your arm and you can kind of heal.
Yeah, get around, right.
But how do you heal when it's your foot? Like, if you stand up, you're literally putting pressure on this very thing that you're not supposed to put pressure on. You
sure. Know? Yeah, you are literally like bedridden.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that was,
oh my gosh,
that was a depression. And so during that period of time, I was not connecting with music, you know.
Sure.
In terms of me being able to write, I wasn't able to write anything. And part of it was because I didn't feel like I had the inspiration. I didn't know what to write about. You know, I just left it alone. Mm-hmm. And ultimately though, I think it was great for me, because what it led to was this, my new single, Still Dope. And what happened was, you know, as I was sitting down, basically literally sitting down because of
the injury.
And then the pandemic, being in quarantine, I started to, you know, reflect. And I think everybody did, right? Everybody kind of started to reflect on what is life? What is life supposed to mean? What does it mean for me? Mm-hmm. What do I want to do when we come out the other side of this thing? What's my purpose? All these different types of things. And it finally led me to, you know, one night I was just, you know, laying in the bed, and I was scrolling through one of my friends who's a producer. His name's The Audio Unit. I was scrolling through some of his beats on his beat page. And I heard the beat for What's Now Still Dope. And I was like, really inspired by it. I was like, this is really, really sweet. So I started writing to it. And initially I started writing the song, and I was like, you know what I'm going to do? The song was called Still Dope Always, but I was like,
oh, okay.
Let people know that just because you haven't heard from me in a couple of years doesn't mean I'm not still dope. You know?
Yeah. I love that.
But then I realized, I took a step back and I was like, no, that's not what this song is supposed to be. This song is actually supposed to be more general, more for the people, more for the energy to uplift people in their spirits and let them know that no matter what we're going through, we are still dope, right? And I was like, and maybe this is why I got sat down for a second, to make sure that I gain new perspective on the power of music and what I'm supposed to be putting out now, what people want to hear from me, given my, you know, background and given my experiences and my understanding and so on and so forth. And that's literally how the song got created. And it was the only song literally I've written in 2 years,
but
it came to me like a water faucet. You know what I mean? Like it literally didn't take me long at all to write, because I feel like it was something that was really inside of me, you know?
That's amazing. And it's a killer song. I want to talk to you about the video. I saw the music video for it as well, which is amazing.
Yeah. The video was, so, you know, it's interesting because as a artist, you know, I'm also a business person too. Right. So I think of things from both perspectives. I think of, okay, the art and the creation of the art, but also think about the promotion of the art and how to get people to connect to the message and all that, those type of things. Right. Mm-hmm. So as I was, you know, writing the song, the imagery that I feel like I wanted to put out was started to come to me kind of fairly vividly. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I called him my grandmother-in-law. That's who you hear at the beginning of the song.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah. She's the oldest person I know, 84 years old. I've had tons of conversations with her about just history and Black history and just history repeating itself and all these type of
sure.
things.
Sure.
I'm going to have her set the stage for the song, which I
love that.
It was great. So she came in, and then I called in one of the top production companies in the Midwest that I've had a relationship with. And I was like, look, we got to put something together really official, right? This isn't, you know, this can't just be your regular run of the mill music video. This has to actually be impactful. I want this to be something that 10 years from now, 20 years from now, people can look at it and say, yo, this is still dope.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Speak for itself.
Yeah. And so we were able to do that. And, you know, it was we were able to get just really good imagery, put together a story that kind of told the story of, you know, the struggle, the Black struggle in particular, what we've been through over, you know, centuries and over different continents, you know. So there's imagery from people, you know, from the Caribbean and Africa and, you know, obviously all across the Americas. But I didn't want it to be something to offend, because it's not an offensive thing. I wanted it to be something that would inspire, that no matter who you are, you can look at this and say, wow, yeah, this is a really legit product. This is something that I can get behind. This is something that I can support. And so I am super excited for the video. I mean, I feel like it's one of those things, you know, as an artist, you know, you create a lot of stuff, and you, if you're being honest with yourself, you know, like what's your better stuff and what's your worst. You know what I mean? So I don't feel, I haven't felt this way about something in a very, very long time.
Wow. Yeah. I like I said, I got a chance to see the video before you publish it. And it is really cool. It's really a great video.
I appreciate it. Yeah. And everyone who was in part of it, just, it was just good energy. And like I said, I just, you know, this one for me was, it's interesting when you take, you know, in rap, a lot of times you're talking about how dope you are. Right.
And that's right.
So a lot of times the videos reflect that, and you're trying to show how cool you are and all that type of stuff. But this was one that was literally where I felt like I was literally just kind of the vessel, right? The messenger. And so it wasn't really about me. Yeah, I'm in it, but the video is not about me. You know what I mean? Like, you can see really about the people and the struggle and the message and the feeling of hope. And so I'm excited to just share it with the world and let it do what it does. I'm not concerned with the numbers and all that type of stuff, even though I'm sure it'll do well. That's not why I did this. You understand? It's
just kind of, sure.
It's an opportunity to have impact. And that's, to me, is probably the most powerful thing about being an artist.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. Are you working on any new music or just really focusing on this one right now?
Really just focusing on this one right now. But, you know, it's interesting, since I released the song, you know, my producers have been hitting me up like crazy, like, yo, the EP, let's get back in the studio.
And so right.
I'm more open now than I was before. I think my mind is clearer on, you know, just in terms of what I want to do as an artist and what I want to put out. But I'm not putting any like specific like requirements on myself, like, yo, you got to put out something in now.
Sure.
You
know, you 2 weeks out. Or this.
I'm not doing that. But at the same time, I'm definitely much more open now. So hopefully I can get back into the writing process, because I love to write too. You know,
you're great at it as well. So yeah. I can't wait to hear I mean, I love the, like I said, the song Still Dope is so good, and the video as well. So
thank you.
Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I do have one more question before I let you go, Mecca. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Yeah, I do. I think the number one piece of advice that I give, I actually have two pieces of advice. One is, if this is in your heart and you truly believe in it, then stay the course. because, you know, I had a mentor that told me one time, and I thought it was really good. He said, this game is kind of like a battle of attrition, right? There are a lot of people that, you know, want to do it and are going to try to do it. But whoever can withstand the BS literally for the longest and just stay standing will eventually win. And then the second thing is focus on the fans. You know, find your fans, find the people that connect with what you're doing and focus on them. If it's five people, focus on those five people. If it's 1,000 people, focus on them. I think a lot of times aspiring artists get so caught up in trying to be on, you know, this top playlist on Spotify or trying to be, you know, and featured on this blog or whatever, that they don't focus on what really matters. It's the fans, and the fans are the ones that drive the industry. So if you focus on the fans, you stay the course.